the third verse of that old rugged cross. It was on that cross Jesus suffered and died to pardon and sanctify me. So I guess the question is, does the cross end there? Does it end with Jesus? Jesus, the cross is for you, and it, the rest of it is all for me? Yes, we reap the benefits. But the cross doesn't end there. Luke 14, the Lord, before he goes to the cross, is going to say, and whoever does not carry their cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. Suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Won't you first sit down and estimate the cost to see if you have enough money to complete it? Why is he talking about the cross to me? I thought the cross was only you, Jesus. Not quite. Now, this idea of carrying my cross or else I can't be the Lord's disciple, it may sound like a nice idea, and others may find that it's a nice philosophy, or maybe that's good for you. But if you're really going to want to try to apply it, what does it mean to be a disciple? Then you're going to start to ask some tough questions. It's all theoretical until we want to apply it, in which case we're going to have to ask some questions. Like, why is the cross for me? What does being a disciple look like? Is that different from just being saved? Good question. Why is Jesus talking about this whole estimation business? Estimate the cost? He talks about the capacity to pay for something, to see if you have enough money to complete your build. How about desire? Whoever wants to build a tower? How about the choice to actually build a tower? Not to mention this whole following business, when I'm all too good at following myself. What does Jesus have to say here? And with all these questions, the theme that's underlying is that it seems to cost quite a bit. I think the cross cost Jesus quite a bit. It was the greatest price that heaven could pay for someone unworthy like myself. And the Lord is asking the same from me. So what will it cost me? Good question. Well, Luke 14 is going to talk about this cost, and it talks about the financial cost of building a tower. Will being a Christian and taking up my cross and following Jesus impact my financial life? Yes. How about how I spend my time? Because that's finite too. Yes. How about how I spend my energy? Yes. Will it even cost me my life? Maybe. And if I'm serious, then the answer is yes. But before we tackle the spiritual cost, because what Jesus demands is everything, let's talk about some costs that demand a lot, but not all of you. 1776, July 4th. United States is still under the British government, legally and militarily, and they're going to declare their own freedom. Bold move. I mean, good grief, but I suppose they got around and they said, this whole idea of freedom and a new government on our own authority, that we think we can make it better than what we currently have, will it cost us lives? Yeah, it will. Will it cost us time? Yes. But they're going to count the cost. 1969, the U.S. is going to count the cost of getting to the moon. It's going to be $28 billion. You might think it's a waste, but apparently they didn't, because they went ahead and they did it. They said, okay, it's worth this cost. Or how about this one? The hidden treasure hidden in a field, Matthew 13, and when a man finds it, he hides it again, and in his joy he goes and sells it, and he buys that whole field. He sells all he owns, and he buys the field so he can have the treasure. What they all have in common is they counted the cost, yes, but they certainly also deemed it was worth that cost. You can make all the calculations you want, and you could say, no, I don't have the capacity to build this house, or no, I don't have the reason to build this house. But if you build the house, it means, yes, you had the capacity, and yes, you chose it to be worth the cost. Sacrifice. And whenever we use words and phrases like worth the cross, friends, we get a glimpse of the cross, because that is the ultimate sacrifice. And if anyone would sacrifice their life, you might ask them, you know, why did you give your life for something? Isn't your life all you have? And they would probably say, if they could still speak, they'd say, Yes, my life is all I have. But apparently, there's something greater than just my life. And Jesus said that the greater thing than the comfort of heaven, which he by no means had to give up, was to save, what did we call me in this early meeting, a worm? I think that's pretty accurate. Suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Won't you first sit down and estimate to see if you have enough money to complete it? Luke 14:28. Lord, I pray that we count the cost and we deem that you are worth it. So people have made some big sacrifices in history, but oftentimes if you're anything like me, maybe that fools me into thinking that I'm not making any sacrifices. But I don't think that makes any sense. I think I'm always sacrificing something. TJ, why aren't you at the grocery store? Why aren't you? Could be. But for whatever reason, you said, I'm going to come to Mountain Ridge this morning. But by choosing to come to Mountain Ridge, you have effectively destroyed your entire idea of going to the grocery store. Are you making a sacrifice? Absolutely yes. Is it a $28 billion contract to get to the moon? No. Is it a sacrifice? You bet. So since we're finite, fiend, it means end. You know, maybe these ends of me, of my life, are a little wider than they were 100 years ago, but it still means end. So it's less of a question of what do I want and more of a question of what am I not willing to miss out on at this? What am I not willing to miss out on? There's an exclusivity to this. So if we've come to this point where I'm always sacrificing and I'm going to miss out on something, what am I not willing to miss out on? Good question. Let's ask Jesus. Could we turn to Mark chapter 8, please? It's on page 873, your chapel Bible. Verse 34. And when he called the people to him, with his disciples also, he said to them, whoever desires to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake and for the gospel's sake will save it. For what will it profit if a man gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? For whoever is ashamed of me and ashamed of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, the Son of Man will be ashamed of him when he comes in glory of his Father with the holy angels. Jesus says in verse 34, whoever desires to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. It's interesting, the desire to follow him, the same way the Lord says, if you want to build a building, you're going to count the cost. Same thing here. Let's parse through this slowly, and let's wrestle with it and grapple with it, because it's here so we can glean maybe some insight from the Lord. Verse 34, he called the crowd to him along with his disciples and said, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. Okay. We could leave this as theory and not our heads. Or if I actually want to implement something called denying myself, maybe a good question of what does that actually look like? Sounds reasonable. What does it look like to deny yourself? Okay, I have a couple ideas, and I want to hear what you think afterward. If you have ideas and you share them, my ideas are definitely fallible. You have no reason to believe that my words are law. You have a lot of reason to believe that the words of the Bible are law. So if you have ideas, please, let's wrestle and share. Here's an idea. What would it look like to deny yourself? Okay, what would it look like if you didn't have to give into your first desire? What would it look like if your first impulse you didn't have to do? Because for me, my first impulse is often what I do. You want percentages? 99.99, you know, they call it the five nines. As stable as something's up, that's pretty sturdy of a habit there. My first desire, I often go with. Yeah, it's true. But what would it look like if I didn't have to go with my first desire? What if that were actually possible, that someone could have this radical desire to do something and say, hang on, I think there might be something better. What would it actually look like? I see, I want, I do. But what does it look like to deny yourself is I think you deny your first desire because you know that there might be something greater. I think we're on track there. We're always sacrificing, and I'm always giving into something. I'm either giving into who's God or who's not. And all too often, it's myself. So what would it look like if I didn't have to do it? I say so often, when is the next time I'm going to sin? But that should be an if, because I don't have to. So what would it look like to deny myself? Will, you don't have to do it. You don't have to give in to your first desire. I think we're on track there. And Jesus gives this kind of series of three business here. Deny yourself and, you know, and operator, multiplication, take up their cross and follow me. Three seemingly separate statements, but all are necessary. Okay, we looked at the deny yourself. What does it look like to take up my cross? Okay, again, it's all theoretical, and I could say it's my cross to bear until I actually want to take Jesus at his word and say, oh, what does that actually mean? Okay, and we hear it very often in culture. Oh, that's my cross to bear. My sickness, my marriage, my health. It's just my cross. I don't think that's what Jesus is getting at here. Jesus demonstrates that the cross is the place to die. The cross is not going to be your job. My job might be tough, and that's a challenge, and we should mourn with one another, definitely. And we should work with one another. That's not our cross. My cross is not my sickness, and we ought to visit and mourn with one another. That's not my cross. The cross is what we take up as a place to die. And that's what Jesus demonstrates. And you die to yourself in the same way that Jesus challenges you, deny yourself, take up your cross, so that you can live to Christ. You don't trade what you currently have for something else unless you think the thing is worth more. The man who goes to the pearl in the field is going to sell all he has, banking hard on the fact that it's going to be worth all he has. He believes it. And if you read that passage in Matthew, it says he goes with joy. What does it look like to follow me? Okay, must deny themselves, yes. Must take up their cross, yes. And follow me. Okay, here's an idea to consider. And again, if you have ideas, write them down. Share with me, I'd love to hear. I think follow me means to ask, what if I were to pull back the curtains on the vanities of life and ask Jesus, what are you seeing in this room? What are you seeing in my workplace? What are you seeing at work? What are you seeing at school? What is it that's actually happening in reality? Is the question that I'm going to ask. Because Jesus is going to see things clearly. And if I'm following him and I say, Jesus, what do you see? Is this really beautiful? Or is it just masquerading as beautiful? I think the only way we can get that insight and have that vision is by following him. So deny yourself is to not give in to your first desire. To take up your cross is to take up your place to die. And to follow him is to see the vanity for what it is and choose Jesus. Okay, I think, a lot of density there. Verse 35, if we're ready to move on. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. On first read, losing my life for Jesus seems relatively abstract. So I'm glad he puts the gospel in there as a more concrete thing. If I'm just going to read this one time, losing your life for the gospel, you're on the right track. That's fair. That's actually a good outcome. Well, I suppose it's better than denying it. Comfortable? No. But it is better than denying it. Okay. Verse 35. Notice how the one who wants to save their life, Jesus uses the word wants. If I read it one more time and I say, whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever, I'm going to insert a word, this is not what it says, whoever wants to lose their life for me and for the gospel's sake will save it. What Jesus is implying here is the person that wants to save their own life doesn't succeed. You can't do it. Whoever wants to save their life versus whoever actually loses their life. There is no succeeding in saving your life. It's not going to happen. But there can be success in losing your life for Jesus and for the gospel. So, on first read, doesn't it seem kind of backwards? Is it paradoxical? No. I don't buy the paradox that two things can be true at the same time, and that's not what this is saying. Jesus is saying, if you don't give me your soul, if you don't give in, you lose. If you don't lose to me, you lose. Or in other ways, if you don't lose your soul and take up your cross, then you actually will lose your soul. You lose to gain. And not only is this a good thing if you give in to Jesus. You know, if somebody gives in to Jesus and you say, that's good for you, it's negative if you don't. If I refuse to give in to Jesus, and if I say that I'm going to go my way because I am in control of all things, I'm going to end up in real trouble. It's going to be very painful. This is not a neutral decision in the sense of, if I choose, that's good. If I don't choose, agnostic, that's fine. No, these stakes are high. When I sin, I do punish myself. It is a self-inflicting thing. And it hurts me to let go of my sin. But if I don't, it will actually harm me. It'll hurt me to let go. Yes, it's quite uncomfortable to part ways with my sin. But if I don't, it will ruin me. It will actually harm me. It will end me. Verse 36. What good is someone to gain the whole world and yet forfeit their soul? Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? I wonder what that scene would look like in judgment if somebody pays with their credentials and says, but Lord, look at what I made. Look at what I did for humanity. Did you have me? Or the money that I've made? The changes that I've made in the world. But what does it gain to gain the whole world? But you forfeit your soul. And the only way to keep your soul is to give in to Jesus. We ought to get better at giving in to Jesus. I ought to. Pilgrim's Progress by John Bunyan really inspires me. I'm very thankful he wrote it. John Bunyan was in prison and he wrote this story. He had this dream, and he woke up, and he wrote this novel. He wrote this thing all down. Do you call it a novel? You could check me. I'm not certain. But Pilgrim's on his way to the celestial city. The celestial city represents heaven. And he's going to go. He's going to get forgiven by Jesus. This burden is going to fall off his back, and he's going to continue to venture towards the city. Okay. While Pilgrim is traveling, he's going to meet all sorts of characters and go all sorts of places, and he's going to pass this place called Vanity Fair. It's a troublesome place. In Vanity Fair, They have currency and they buy and they sell, but they don't use the US dollar. They sell sin. They buy and sell pleasure. They buy and sell lust. They buy and sell extra comfort. So pilgrim, walking through Vanity Fair, is going to see the facade for what it is. I think this is what it means to follow him, to see Vanity Fair for what it is, saying this is not how it is. I am being tricked. He's going to see through the facade of pleasure. He's going to see through the facade of status. Here are some lyrics, not from the perspective of the Christian, but from the perspective of the host of Vanity Fair, whose name is Beelzebub. He's the evil leader that keeps the Vanity Fair economy going. In the words of Beelzebub, he says to his people, I'd ask you in, but you're already inside, and there's plenty to do here that's keeping you starry-eyed. It can look as good as love or as bad as a nasty affair. You might call it home, but I know it's Vanity Fair. So tell me, what is your pleasure today? A respected name or aspire to be Claude Monet? You've got no time to waste, and the world is moving fast. And I can see it from here. Your potential is vast. It's a familiar message. Beelzebub said, you started like them all in pursuit of the city, but you stopped for a glance because all of our lights looked so pretty. And my favorite part is that you don't even see the snare. Now we've got one more. You stay in Vanity Fair. And you've been here so long, and now you question, why with all this, why still the depression? And you try to resist, but it's down deep in your genes. My job is quite simple. You, by any means. The Song of Vanity Fair. It's adversarial, this sin that we have. It is not a neutral thing, that if we choose not to give in to Jesus, we are actively hurting ourselves. If only I would realize that before I do my foolish actions, instead of after. Verse 38. If anyone is ashamed of me and my words and this adulterous and sinful generation, of him the Son of Man will be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father and with the holy angels. I love computer science and I love logic. I'm so thankful the Lord gave it to me. And there's this word, there's this concept I'd like to share with you. It might not make you a lot of friends. So I can't, it might not help there, but it's fun nonetheless. It's the word Xor, X-O-R. Some people call it X-OR. And it's the letter X and the word OR, O-R. In computer science, if we're powering a light bulb and there are two power sources that go to it, if one is on, we're good. We don't need both of them. If one power source is going, we're set. It's only bad when they don't. When neither of them go. The X in OR stands for the word exclusive. Exclusive OR. And this is usually how we talk about the word OR. It's me OR this. It's the trumpet OR the piano with this hour of practice. I saw a comic. It's me or the dog. Whatever it is, right? This is exclusive. You must choose. And Jesus is using this X-O-R, Zor. He's saying, this is exclusive. If anyone is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, the Son of Man will be ashamed of them when he comes in his Father's glory with the holy angels. He's saying, you must choose. And as much as I like to pretend, my absence of a choice, nice choice. I'm not choosing. I won't choose. Now, this you're going to have to take a stand. I'm not giving in to anything. No, you're giving in. You're giving in to your skepticism. You're giving in to something that's not worth giving into. He's the only one that's credible enough for me to give my whole self to. If I were God, I'd give myself to myself. But I'm finite, so I must give in to the infinite. 30 verses later, if we flip over one page to chapter 9 and look at verse 33. Now, you could tell me how long passed between these passages. I don't know. But all I know is they happen in order here. And let's read from verse 33, because this was a major blunder that the disciples make after Jesus says all of this. This is a blunder. Verse 33. Then he came to Capernaum, and when he was in the house, he asked them, "What is it that you disputed among yourselves on the road?" The disciples were talking with one another. But they kept silence. They kept silent, for on the road they had disputed among themselves who would be the greatest. And he sat down, and he called the 12, and he said to them, "If anyone desires to be first of all, he shall be last of all and servant of all." Done deal. Then he took a little child and set him in the midst of them, and he said, when he had taken him in his arms, he said to them, whoever receives one of these little children in my name receives me, and whoever receives me receives not me, but him who sent me. This verse 35 is going to be the major selling point here. If anyone desires to be first, he shall be last of all and servant of all. So if we visit Vanity Fair, or if we just walk outside, because maybe they're not terribly unfamiliar with one another. They have a lot more in common than maybe we like to admit. What does the world call first? What does the world call great? Because Jesus is saying here, if you want to be first, okay, what would the world say? What do you call great? Or what would the world call great? Is it however many wins you get? Is it how high you could play on the trumpet? That's a fair one that people compete for, definitely. But what if, as we're following Jesus, we can see past this illusion of Vanity Fair, we could say, what if it isn't so great after all? And ask Jesus, what do you call great? Because he's God, I am not. And a very fun statement to say is, if somebody else died and rose from the dead, I would listen to whatever they say very closely. Very closely, and you ought to too. So if he did, then he knows what he's talking about. What does Jesus call great? And whose opinion am I going to listen to? The one who rose from the dead? That's a better one. And Jesus himself is going to be the one who demonstrates it. He's going to say, you are great if you serve. And I suppose without God, we are award-winning, record-setting, insignificant dust in the universe. It's interesting, isn't it? We're just pretending. But if there is a God, and yes, that's an argument from consequence. You shouldn't base your life off of consequence there. But it's true. We would just be pretending. And when Jesus sits down in verse 35, I used to read this, and let me know what you think. I used to read this and think, oh, he's sitting down to demonstrate humility. I was wrong. He's demonstrating authority here. He's saying, I am the authority in this moment. I am God. And now it is your turn to listen. If you want to be first, be last. Done deal. That's it. Take up your cross. It's a big calling. And I'm going to have to give myself to something. He's a good candidate. He's a good candidate. You wouldn't be a fool to do so. So how often do I put myself over the words of Jesus? Or how often do you put yourself first over the words of Jesus, my needs and my wants? Because I am God of my own choices, and I am so selfish, I want to prosper myself. Okay? Let me challenge that idea, that if you were truly selfish, and if you really wanted what was best for yourself, you would give in to Jesus. You'd give up. So in a funny way, you're not selfish enough. If only you were more self-invested to give yourself into Jesus. You're missing out. Be more invested in yourself and give in to him. It's the best option we got. So in response, it should be, I don't care how tough the road is. Show me where it starts. Because I'm going to either suffer with him or I'm going to suffer without him. One more thing about this thought of exclusivity. People talk a lot about FOMO, right? The fear of missing out. Has it been around forever? I don't know. How long has it been around? Last however many years? Not sure. I don't know. It's popular enough. Maybe it's more escalated with the internet that people feel like they're missing out on all this, since you could, you know, day trade on your phone or whatever. But we always are going to miss out. So the reality of FOMO and the fear of missing out is not saying, oh boy, I'm going to miss out. Because the truth is, you are. We're finite. We have to choose. It's the question of, what am I not willing to miss out on? You can go and you can follow your own desires, but it's not as good of an option as following Jesus. So this fear of missing out is not the enemy. In fact, we don't have enough fear of missing out. If only I was so afraid of missing out on Jesus, maybe I would spend more time with him. I'm so caught up in all these other things, aren't I? I need more fear. I don't want to miss out. And if I do give in, if I do take up my cross and follow him as Jesus said, then I could ask the question, what has Jesus cost me? The answer number one is everything. This is a holistic thing. You're going to give yourself to something. Choose wisely. It should be everything. And even though I gave Jesus everything, he never cost me my best option. Yes, did he cost me a lot of earthly pleasure? Plenty. Absolutely. Nobody's arguing you're not going to miss out on earthly pleasure, but he's never going to cost you the best option. And Jesus sacrifices first. The Lamb of God that was slain before the foundation of the world, this was always the plan. And if economists are telling the truth when they say that something is only worth as much as someone is willing to pay, and apparently Jesus thought we were worth quite a bit. So in response, I'm going to remember the sacrifice of Jesus, and I'm going to remember, yes, I can choose to not sacrifice myself. I don't have to. But oh my goodness, is it the best option? We ought to. So, as we live as finite people, well, I suppose eternally infinite in heaven, which we have a hope in, but on this earth, we're going to miss out. Let's choose wisely, and let's not miss out on taking up our cross and following Jesus. Let's close in prayer. Lord Jesus, I just pray that you change our ideas to reflect the truth, that we might live for you. That whatever lie we believe, whatever reason we're not acting, whatever reason that I'm not giving myself in, that you bring to the forefront and we address. Teach us to follow you. Amen.